Now Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the Redeemer, of whom Boaz had spoken, came by. And Boaz said, "Turn aside, friend, sit down here." And he turned aside, sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. Then he said to the Redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it, in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me, that I may know, for there is none beside you to redeem it, and I come after you." And he said, "I will redeem it." Then Boaz said, "The day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance." Then the Redeemer said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it." Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm a transaction, one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the manner of attesting in Israel. So when the Redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself," he drew off his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders, "And all the people, you are witnesses this day, that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech, and all that belonged to Chilion and to Mahlon. Also Ruth, the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have bought to be my wife, to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native place. You are witnesses this day." Then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you act worthily in Ephrathah and be renowned in Bethlehem. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that the Lord will give you by this young woman." So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a redeemer. And may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is more to you than 7 sons, has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David.
Thank you, Helen, very much. Well, in this story of Ruth, we've been reflecting on God and what it is to know God, who is the God that we know, the God of the Bible. And we've rediscovered, haven't we, together, that God is a God who is in control. Even when things go horribly wrong in our lives, even when we rebel and sin against God, he is in control. But he's not just in control. Not just sort of God out there in a dispassionate way, controlling everything. He is lovingly in control. He is kind. God is in control, but he's also kind. And we can rely upon him. We can trust him to be ruling over all the circumstances of our lives. Well, Ruth, at the end of chapter 3, if you remember last week, it got to the point in the story where one of the tensions that's being built up is what's going to happen to the romantic side of the story. And Ruth basically asks Boaz to marry her. And Boaz has this moment where he's got this woman of distinction, this woman who's a wise woman, this woman who smells good, this woman who's younger than him, lying at his feet, saying, "Will you marry me?" And instead of that being end of the story and all being wrapped up there and then and ending happily ever after, Boaz at that point goes and does the godly thing. And so the tension in the story goes on. He decides to play it by the book. And so the question at the beginning of chapter 4 is still, will they get it together? You remember the end of chapter 3? We thought, well, we don't know what's going to happen. It's out of Boaz's hands, it's out of Ruth's hands, it's out of Naomi's hands as they head into the town to figure out this other guy who's a closer kinsman redeemer and has got rights and is in a better position to marry Ruth than Boaz. Will they ever get together is the question. What happens next? Well, they head into town. Boaz heads into town and look at verses 1 to 4. Let me just reread those. Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, "Turn aside, friend, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. Then he said to the Redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of thee sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you." Now, we ought to be saying at this point in the story, well, hang on a moment. We thought it was all about redeeming Naomi and redeeming Ruth. That seems to have been what was behind what was going on in chapter 2. What on earth is all this about land? Last week we were thinking about continuing Mahlon's name. Ruth had been married to Mahlon, and the law in the Old Testament said that Mahlon's brother or the next of kin should marry Ruth and so perpetuate his name. Now they're no longer talking about names and perpetuating names. They're talking about land, about a parcel of land. They're talking about property. Well, kinsmen redeemers had responsibilities for members of their family, but they also had responsibilities that related to land. So we turn to Leviticus 25 and verses 23 to 25. It's on page 124. Just flip back in the church Bibles to page 124. "The land shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine," this is the Lord speaking, "for you are strangers and sojourners with me, and in all the country you possess, you shall allow a redemption of the land. If your brother becomes poor and sells part of his property, then his nearest redeemer shall come and redeem what his brother has sold." So what's going on there? Well, quite simply, God provided for families who fell into debt. As a big principle there for us to know in amongst our own Christian community, a good lesson for us, perhaps even to be thinking through socially in terms of our nation as well. There's good patterns here for a healthy nation. God provides for families who fall into debt, people who are forced to sell up. You see, land equals crops. Crops equals food. Food equals income and security and survival and well-being. Land was important. And Leviticus says, well, actually the land wasn't their security. Ultimately, the Lord was their security. And that was marked out by everyone remembering that the land belonged to the Lord. So the Lord is your security. And one of the ways that God demonstrates that is actually through the land and that what the land provides. Someone was to lose the land that was under God theirs, they would lose their security. So God provided for them to regain the land and so remain secure. Well, Ruth's husband wasn't around. He was a Moabite, wasn't he? The land that they're talking about here in chapter 4, it belonged to Naomi's dead husband, Elimelech. And it seems at some point, we're not told about in the story, may have been when he went off to Moab, he had lost his land, sold up. So it's up to the kinsman redeemer that Boaz speaks to at the city gate, or to Boaz, to redeem that parcel of land, and in so doing, provide for Naomi, Elimelech's husband. Okay. So the other kinsman redeemer, he rather likes the idea. So you look back at verse 4 of Ruth chapter 4. And he said, I will redeem it. So he's obviously a good businessman. He sees an opportunity here and he says, yeah, okay, I will redeem the land. So basically at this point we go, oh no. Well, that means that things aren't going to figure out for Ruth and Boaz. It's kind of like hangs on the very edge of the seat at this point at the beginning of chapter 4. It's not all sorted out. He's got himself a good deal, it seems, this fella. Perhaps it's fertile land. Sure, he will have an extra mouth to feed. He'll have to be feeding Naomi. She's getting on. She may not have much of an appetite. She may be nearing the end of her life. I don't know, all sorts of stuff may have been going through this guy's mind. It's not a bad deal. You know, she's old, she can't have children. I'll, you know, just be caring for her. Boaz, we've seen already, is godly. Boaz, we've seen already, is very generous. Boaz, we see here in chapter 4, is also very shrewd. He responds to this other fellow with verse 5. Then Boaz said, the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth, and he underlines it, Ruth called herself Ruth the servant. Boaz brings back the word Moabite. You also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance. It's a different matter. It's his trump card that Boaz brings out at this point. Brings Ruth into the equation. So it's not just one mouth to feed. There's Naomi and there is Ruth to feed. And as kinsman redeemer, do the honourable thing. There will be three mouths to feed. There will be the sound of little feet wandering around your home very soon. So marry her, provide for her, provide for a dead husband, provide a dead husband with an inheritance. Also, remember, in time, the land will not be yours. It will be the child belonging to the child that you have with Ruth. So it is an investment that you have to make with no payback whatsoever, is really what Boaz says to this fella. Well, that changes everything. The cost is far too high. And don't get me wrong, I think Boaz emphasizes the cost here. The cost of being a kinsman redeemer is very, very high indeed. And that is how this guy responds in verse 6. Then the redeemer said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it. It's too costly. I can't do it. I don't want to endanger my own security that I've already got. And then verses 7 to 8, we get a cultural insight. Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm a transaction, one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other. And this was the manner of attesting in Israel. So when the redeemer said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, he drew off his sandal. It's interesting, the writer of the story there says this is what they did in those days with no further explanation. So that's what I'm going to say. That's what they did in those days with no further explanation. Shoes swapped. There's a bit of a cheer, a big cheer. Now we get to the climax of the story. Boaz is free to marry Ruth. Ruth is secure. She's free to be secure. Naomi is secure as well. I think we're meant to have a sense of a cheer here, clapping of hands. The romantic side of the story, I think, is all there. But we also need to remember that it is God's story. The high cost of being a kinsman redeemer, verses 9 and 10. This is what Boaz says. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you are witnesses this day that I have bought from the hand of the hand of Naomi, all that belonged to Elimelech, and all that belonged to Chilion and to Mahlon. Also Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have brought to be my wife, to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native land. You are witnesses this day. You see, Boaz makes a massive investment in another man's name, ensuring his name and ensuring that his children are not cut off from God's people, from the land. He pays for them to be redeemed. So as we draw this story to a close, I want to just draw out four simple things. First of all, Ruth's redeemer, Boaz. Throughout the story, Ruth is called, other than when she speaks of herself, to Boaz, called Ruth the Moabitess. She wasn't just a foreigner. As a Moabite, she was part of a people who were enemies of the Lord and the Lord's people. She was excluded from the promises of God. She was, as a Moabite, outside of God's blessing. And yet we've found in the story that she turned to the Lord. She turned away from the idols of Moab. She turned away from the security that her own family and the Moabite people could provide for her. She turned to the Lord and said to Naomi, your people will be my people and your God will be my God. And the Lord provided her with a kinsman redeemer, Boaz. At great cost, Ruth became a fellow citizen in the household of God. We see it in the prayer of the elders at the town gate, that she makes a big impact on God's people. And the prayer that these guys pray is that would this Ruth have as bigger impact upon the people of God as other women of God and amongst the people of God have had on the providence of God and the plans of God in the past. That's what they pray. She's not just come out from the fringes onto the edges of the church family. She's come and there's a prayer for her to be right dead central within the bosom of the family and in God's plans for his people. That's what's said in verses 11 and 12. Then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. So may this woman be a part of building up the people of God. May you act worthily in Ephrathah and renowned in Bethlehem. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that the Lord will give you by this young woman. What a prayer. What a prayer. A prayer for a family to be filled with blessing. And God's family to be built up through this family being built up. And of course, we know, and we'll be getting at the moment, that that's what happened. Their prayers were answered. So Ruth has this redeemer, Boaz. It's great cost. Naomi also has a redeemer, and that is Boaz as well, verses 13 to 17. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. This is interesting. Then the woman said to Naomi, not to Ruth, to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. And he's renowned in Sheffield this morning. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. So there's a redeemer actually in the lad that's been born. Security for the future. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. That is wonderful, isn't it, for this woman? The bitterness that she ended chapter one with. Everything lost. You know? And now she is sat there with this wee baby on her lap, nursing this little child. Absolutely wonderful in the story here. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. The Lord at work in the affairs of life. Verse 13, the Lord enabled Ruth to conceive. That's what it's emphasized there. The Lord enabled her to conceive. Verse 14, the women praised who? They praised God for Naomi's redeemer, Ruth's son, Naomi's grandson. The story began with Naomi's tragic sorrows, loneliness, poverty, bitterness, empty without hope. Now Naomi has a future where she had no future. The story ends with Naomi experiencing the fullness of life and a peaceful future. That's what verse 15 says. "He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age." They say that children are a great blessing to you in your old age. And someone very wittily also said they get you there sooner as well. But this little lad's going to be a nourisher for her in her old age. The Lord provided a kinsman redeemer and a daughter greater than seven sons and a grandson. And it all came about through this generous redeemer, Boaz. And then the book ends rather oddly. I don't know many stories you read outside of the Bible that end with a genealogy. Verses 17 to 22. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David. So Ruth's redeemer, Boaz. We've got Naomi's redeemer, which is Boaz. And, interestingly enough, her own grandson. And then thirdly, we've got Israel's redeemer, David, who is introduced here. Just flip back to the beginning of Ruth. Ruth chapter 1, verse 1, begins with these words. "In the days when the judges ruled." Those were terrible days. Days was of a downward spiral. Days when people did what was fit in their own eyes. Days when we read at the end of Judges, there was no king. Ruth's son Obed would be David's grandfather. So the story begins with setting it in its context in the Judges, and it ends with the hope that God's rule is going to come in a very wonderful and a special way through his king. God is faithful to Naomi and Ruth. And Naomi and Ruth's story tell us that God is faithful to Israel. God gave rest to Ruth. Chapter 1, verse 9 talks about Ruth having rest. Chapter 3, verse 1 talks about Ruth having rest. And David is the one who brings rest to the people of Israel. So turn on, if you would, to Samuel. You can leave the book of Ruth now and you don't have to keep your place there. We're heading off into the rest of the Bible as we draw to a close. 2 Samuel chapter 7, verses 8 to 11. That's page 311. 3:11, 2 Samuel, chapter 7, verse 8. "Now therefore thus you shall say to my servant David, thus says the Lord of hosts, I took you from the pasture, from following the sheep, that you should be prince over my people Israel. And I have been with you wherever you went, and have cut off all your enemies from before you. And I will make for you a great name, like the name of the great ones of the earth, and I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and I will plant them so that they may dwell in their own place and be disturbed no more, and violent men shall inflict them no more as formerly. From that time I appointed judges over my people Israel, and I will give you rest from all your enemies. Moreover, the Lord declares to you that the Lord will make you a house, a family." It's going to build up a secure family through David, through this offspring of Ruth and Naomi and Boaz. So David becomes the redeemer for Israel, providing security and peace, bringing an end to the days of the judges when everyone did everything what was right in their own eyes, bringing an end to all the fighting that they had with the Philistines and the other Canaanites around them. And of course, David was the forerunner to Jesus. So Ruth has a redeemer here. Naomi has a redeemer here. Israel has a redeemer here. And Israel's redeemer, David, points forward to the world's redeemer, to your redeemer and to my redeemer. So flip on to Matthew chapter 1. Ruth's story ends with a genealogy. The New Testament begins with a genealogy, the genealogy of Jesus. And as we look through the genealogy of Jesus, we get what we might call four shady ladies within the genealogy. It is all men having sons, but there are four women mentioned in particular, all of questionable reputation in some way, shape or form. There is verse 3, Tamar. And there is verse 5, Rahab. And there is Ruth, verse 5, the Moabitess. And then there is verse 6, Uriah's wife. That was Bathsheba. David and her committed adultery. And that was produced Solomon. Women of an undistinguished origin, shady ladies, who became a part of God's plan to bring about the coming of his Messiah, the one that David looked forward to, Jesus Christ. And Matthew, at the beginning of his gospel, is basically saying God has worked in strange ways to bring about his purposes in the past. So what's the big problem with a virgin birth in Bethlehem? Verse 16. God's done all sorts of wonderful things in the past in ways that we wouldn't have expected. And so through this insignificant widow Ruth, and through the events of her life, God was working out his purpose to bring the world's Redeemer, Jesus Christ. And who would have thought that thousands of years before? Who would have thought those guys sat at the gate of Bethlehem, having just watched this deal happen, who prayed for Boaz and Ruth, for the building up and the blessing of God's people through this woman? Who would have thought? Would they have thought that it would have led to the God coming as a man into that very same family? God, in absolute loving, kind, sovereign control through the events and the lives of little people, people who are way out on the fringes, enemies of God's people, like Ruth, coming and becoming from right out on the fringes, right dead central within the very plans of God. The world has a Redeemer, Jesus Christ. He is your Redeemer. He is my Redeemer. Ruth's story is your story. It's our story. Ruth was a Gentile. And as I look around the room, I don't see many Jews here. I see people from different parts of the world here, different continents. We are here are all Gentiles. Ruth is our story. She was a Gentile, she was a picture of what was to come. Enemies of God, separated, excluded, needing redemption at a very, very high price, being brought into the family of God. So lastly, we turn to Ephesians chapter 2 as we draw this Bible overview at the end of Ruth to a close. Ephesians chapter 2, page 1175. Ephesians 2 verses 11 to 13. Just listen. This is Ruth's story being spoken about here, but it's to the Gentiles in Ephesus. And basically it rings true with your story and my story. Therefore, remember that at one time you Gentiles in the flesh, called the uncircumcision by what is called the circumcision, which is made by the flesh made in the flesh by hands. Remember that you were at that time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope, and without God in the world. That is you, that is me, that was Ruth. But now, in Christ Jesus, that is King Jesus, Messiah Jesus, you who are once far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. And verse 19, so then, you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. Saints, I think in Ephesians, is used of Christian Jews. And if you read Ephesians through, just think when the word saints comes up, he's talking about Christian Jews and talking about the Gentile Christians coming in and being one with the saints, one with Gentiles and Jewish Christians, all one together. And we remember right in a moment the Lord's Supper. We eat and we drink around a table, reminding us that we fellowship with God as the family of God, having been his enemies. And we remember the great price that was paid. Jesus' blood for your blood. Jesus' death for your death. To bring you and me personally into his family. It is wonderful, isn't it? Absolutely profound and rich and fantastic to smell and to taste the wine as we pass around. To smell and taste bread, to eat together. Eating together has got it has a very powerful effect, doesn't it? Eating together and remembering how we were brought into this family and saying, this is a wonderful family to belong to. I know what it is to be served. I want to be a part of this family serving into the future. And I want to pray the kind of prayers that those guys prayed at the city gate in Bethlehem. I want to pray for the blessing of this family. I want to be a part of it and be a blessing and be a servant of this family. I don't want to be out there on the fringes. I'm not a Gentile. And I'm right there in the midst of it all. Right where I belong. Not because I deserve it, but because I have a kinsman redeemer. And you know, as we look to the future, Ruth's story and our story carry on. They carry on because Ruth's story was a part of the great plan of God to bring about the first coming of Jesus Christ, the Redeemer. And your story and my story, and we don't know what happens in chapter 5 or chapter 6. We don't know about the future as we go to planting Christchurch Walkley. We don't know about the future for Christchurch Central. We don't know about the future in our own lives. And, you know, some of us here unemployed, looking for work. We don't know about the future of our own lives where we face illness, where we face despair. We don't know about the future where we know we've mucked up and things have gone wrong. But you know what? In this family, God will be working about his purposes to bring, and you, but we're part of it. We don't see it. But he's going to, through us, everything will lead to that day when Jesus, our Redeemer, comes a second time. And we may look back and go, wow, I didn't see. Now I see. Now I see how it all figures out to the very glory of God and praise of his name. So I think appropriately we're going to sing, There's a Place Where the Streets Shine. Our musicians are going to come out and lead us in song as we look forward to God continuing working out his purposes through you and through me in the days ahead. Let's stand and let's sing.